Welcome to Cord Killers Reckoning. The world of entertainment is turned upside down, and we're just trying to find out how to watch what we want, where we want, whenever we want. I'm Tom Merritt. Brian Brushwood, where's the good stuff?
Oh, man, we're about to find out. I do have second thoughts about wearing this Robco hat after the stuff that we watched this week. We'll get to that later.
I don't have my Vault-Tec shirt on. Just
My Pip-Boy watch is currently charging in the car. That's probably for the best.
There you go. More to come on that. But first, let's go on a supply run.
Future events such as these will affect you in the future.
There's a bunch of examples of what streaming companies are trying now that we have moved into the monetization slash consolidation phase. I've been banging this drum for weeks and weeks and weeks. We have gone from, hey, everybody, cheap access to streaming. We'll give you everything as they tried to acquire users. And we've gone into what is a normal phase for almost all businesses. Okay, some folks are going out of business. Let's consolidate. Let's figure out which of us are going to survive. And let's figure out which of us can actually pay for the services that we're developing. So we got lots of examples here. Disney CEO Bob Iger told CNBC the password sharing crackdown for Disney Plus will begin in June. That includes Hulu and ESPN, by the way. It will start in just a few countries in a few markets before expanding to everyone in September. The terms of service have been updated, and when Disney Plus detects password sharing, it will prompt the user to get their own password. Account holders will also have the option of adding members from outside the house for an additional fee. They didn't announce how much that fee is going to be yet. And not coincidentally, Iger believes Disney's streaming business will be profitable by the end of the year, not just because of this, but partly because of this. Streaming companies are moving from acquiring users to figuring out how to make streaming businesses work. And a little addendum that came in just today, the information found some documents indicating that Disney Plus might add some streaming linear channels, like your sort of fast style channels organized around Marvel, Star Wars, Pixar, etc. I mean, they should do a Simpsons channel. They've got The Simpsons, for instance. I got lots of other examples here. Obviously, Netflix began its password sharing and started making money, so Disney expects it to do the same, Brian. But, you know, I mean, this isn't shocking at this point, right?
Well, so when we first, Netflix was the first to kind of crack and start cracking down. So it's like in the before times, and keep in mind for new listeners, and I know we have a few, we've been doing this for 14 years. And in the beginning, it was interesting because it was very difficult to get your hands on HBO original material. And they intentionally didn't make their many ways to get a hold of it. And they enjoyed kind of like double dipping of like, not only would they get the cable fees, but also, you know, the HBO Go and the HBO Nows and all that stuff. And on top of that, they got the notoriety of having Game of Thrones be the single most pirated thing in the entire planet or whatever. So, you know, obviously pendulum swing and so on. And right. I know when Netflix started cracking down, we questioned whether or not, is this them just catching cake crumbs on the ground? Are they running out of steam or whatever? But strangely, and tell me if you disagree with this, Tom, now that Disney's doing the same thing, it kind of feels to me like, the Big Bang happens and then planets consolidate, right? Kind of going back to the big three that you and I remember from our childhood.
Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, stuff like that. Yeah. It looks to me like Disney looked at Netflix and was like, great, Netflix, you be the first out that door and see how it works. And, you know, lo and behold, they made it out the door and they survived. So Disney's like, great, we'll do the same thing. And it looks like everybody's going to do the same thing. The good news is there does not seem to be a lot of disruption to Netflix. You will find the anecdotal accounts of people who went on a vacation and ran into the password sharing problem and couldn't get good customer support. You'll find people who claim like, I wasn't sharing my password and it thought I was, even though I was at home. Those are technical glitches, but those don't seem to be widespread. They seem to be fairly rare, and people have not canceled Netflix in the amount that people threatened they were going to cancel Netflix. So from the Netflix side, it seems to have worked as well. It looks like that's what we're going to see with Disney. And like you say, I think we're going to see other companies do the same thing. It's just going to become standard. I like the idea that they give you a chance to add a person to your account rather than just kick you off. I think that's smart on their side to recover a little fast money, makes it easier to convert somebody into a paying subscriber. And I think that's good on the customer side to say, hey, we don't want you to do this for free anymore, but here's a way that you can, you know, pay to continue to keep things the way they were.
Speaking of fast money, ooh, good segue. However, I shouldn't have called out the segue. I know you disapprove. The ad-supported, the ad-supported nature of things, I think, actually makes a lot of sense. I don't see why you wouldn't do that. And maybe I'm putting Disney in a special category because The Wonderful World of Disney was always ad-supported on ABC, and they own ABC and ESPN, and you know, Disney has been cozy with advertising for a long time. I don't see much downside to them doing that. Wait, what about you?
Yeah, I don't either. It will be interesting to see how they implement it for the tiers that pay for ad free. I'm assuming they'll just be ad free, and it'll just be a fun service that you can get of like, hey, just watch all the stuff. I'm going to guess there's promos in there because there's going to be a timing issue to keep the timing running properly. I think for the ad supported version, though, it's great because they're making money off ads. They don't want to disrupt your viewing with a lot of ads when you're on demand because we're more sensitive to that, but we're more accustomed to advertisements coming in a lean back scenario. So they'll be able to deliver more ads also because people tend to leave those fast channels up running longer because they just go into the next show.
I guess on top of that, we have the fact that Disney Plus programming tends to be not your first time to watch it. It tends to be like, oh, I love this one. And then it's like, interrupts with a, you know,
not as big of a deal because you're not like subsumed in it. It's more waterfall television. It's more background television.
Yeah.
A couple other examples of monetization here. Roku filed a patent. That doesn't mean they're doing it yet, but they filed a patent on a method where a TV running the Roku OS, so a Roku TV, but you know, it could be made by anyone, just running the Roku OS, would be able to tell if anything was plugged into it and paused. So Chromecast, Fire TV, Apple TV, this patent would say, I know this is a Chromecast plugged in and I know it's not playing video right now. Like I can tell by the bitrate that it's paused, and then it could put its own ad up on the screen saying, hey, I see you're paused. Here's a Roku ad. So in other words, if you have that Roku TV, Roku could make more money off of you as a Roku TV owner. Apparently, it could work for paused video games as well, not just for television. And it could even analyze the paused screen to serve an ad relevant to what you were pausing, whether it was a game or a TV show.
So I'm going to assume that this was specifically written about ads. I was trying to think of use cases besides ads to put this on. And I don't know entirely what they would be. No, I guess just ads. Like you might as well get
subscription. I was like, you know, pitching a subscription to something else, but that's just an ad. That's another name for an ad. So yeah.
And before anybody writes us at cordkillers@gmail.com, by the way, feel free to chime in on how you feel about any of this stuff. We were talking before the show, Tom, about how just because somebody files a patent doesn't mean it's gonna happen.
Right.
It just means somebody had an idea like, what if, and then is basically calling dibs on that idea.
And if you want to be honest about it, like nobody wants to be. Everybody just wants to be outraged and say, well, this happens to my Roku TV, I'll light it on fire. But if you're being honest, if it's a big full screen ad that's annoying and covers everything up, you're going to be upset.
They won't do it then.
If it's small, if it's a tiny thing up in the corner and it's really relevant, you're either not going to notice or you're not going to care much. or you're not going to notice as much as you think you notice. Yeah.
You know what they could do is they could use that real estate, that time, to kind of remind you, like, hey, here's a report about your viewing habits.
Oh, sure. A little public service. Yeah.
You know that you like this more than you like this. Mm-hmm. Would you like to be reminded when season 7 of this comes on? So it could actually be a value add. Yeah. But maybe I'm being too optimistic.
And more to your point, it might never happen because it's just a patent. They just filed it. Last example here, Paramount announced it's going to launch a mobile shopping experience. In fact, they launched it during the CMT Music Awards, letting customers buy stuff based on what's on the show. So, you know, your favorite country music star comes up there wearing a cool shirt. You can buy the shirt. CBS Sports and talk show viewers will soon get similar integrations. Peacock already does this with ads. They include a QR code on the screen. So if you see an ad and you like the thing, you can scan the QR code. This is a little different because it's on mobile in sync with what you're watching. So what you're watching doesn't change, but there's something happening on your phone that's like, hey, that's the shirt on the guy up there right now. You can buy it.
Tom, as somebody who's wearing a Robco trucker hat from the video game series Fallout, who just watched Fallout, I'm outraged by this opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or maybe I think it's the best thing on the planet.
I was going to say, of the examples we're talking about, this feels like the best one. Now, you may or may not use it, but it is useful because often I have seen something on TV. Maybe it's a product, you know, maybe it's not clothing, but I'm like, ooh, that's cool. I want to find out more about that. This lets you do that. That gives you an easy way to get that information, but it's not disrupting your experience. Well, it's not cracking down on password sharing. It's not doing any of that stuff.
And to be honest, of the two of us, I'm a bigger fan, it seems, of the Amazon.com X-ray feature, where it's like the moment you pause it, it says, these are all of the actors.
Yeah.
It's like, what if it just also said, these are all of the clothes they're wearing? These are where you can get all of the things that you see on there. Yeah. These are the top YouTube cosplay experts who, like, Bill Duran will make one of these.
Yes, right.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it's hard for me to be upset about this. If it fills out, it basically translates, my heart's energy into something wonderful.
Well, get ready to hear more of these kinds of things, because we are well into the phase of companies trying to figure out the best way to pay for their services, besides raising your subscription price, because I think they've all gotten pretty close to the top level of what they can do as far as raising the prices, and they don't want to push it too far. People actually will cancel instead of just threaten to cancel. Side note, I was using X-ray a lot, because it's in Prime Video. But there was one situation where I had to still go open IMDb separately, because I didn't want to click away from the video. I didn't want to stop the video, but I wanted to find out something about the biography.
They actually have like a live mode now where, as it plays off to the right, it will just change and show you the names of everything without even stopping it.
Maybe it didn't have the information, but it was like, when I did it, I was like, oh, I haven't had to do this. This is the first time I've had to go there, because I went beyond the boundaries, but it's pretty good. Not going to lie. It's not as good as supporting your favorite creator directly, though, is it?
Oh, man. Tom, you bring this up all the time, and I'm always like, name one provider that has gone fully independent that you trust, with two characters who are honest, earnest, and thoughtful about their discourse about how to go loud, live, and independent, how to cut the cord back when that used to be a thing, and now how everything is consolidating. And explain to me why it's at patreon.com/cordkillers.
And I say the answer is inside of you, and it was the whole time, Brian.
What?
What Brian just described is us. If you didn't catch it, we exist because of you. We're like fairies. If you don't believe / support us on Patreon, we go away.
Yeah, we're I'm gonna pull a Jeb Bush. Please clap.
Please clap. No, seriously.
Head on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. Keep us loud, live, independent, showing up every single week, giving you the latest insights on the cord cutting revolution and the fallout that happened after. You guys have changed lives, and it's really, really wonderful. So please, please have access to our after talk segment of the show, which is going to be pretty thick this week. Like we're going to talk about some stuff, and we're going to keep it spoiler free. But in the after talk segment, we're going to spoil it up.
Indeed. Time now for the search party. We're looking around for good things to watch, and Paramount Pictures announced it has started work on a new Star Trek movie. Slash Film reports that Untitled Star Trek Origin Story will in fact be a prequel to the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie of 2009. And, Brian, I think you'll find this interesting, will be directed by Toby Haynes of Andor fame.
Now, Toby Haynes directed not all of them, but a few of them.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was Tony Gilroy. He's the showrunner, right? Yeah, I got confused. He wrote most of it and show ran it.
Yeah. So not J.J. Abrams, but I assume we're going to see the Chris Pineverse. I don't know how many, if it's an origin story, like, will we have younger versions of these? Is that a way to get around the high contracts and contract issues that they've had? But it will be in the Abrams verse. It will not be in the main, what is it? Star Trek Prime, I think is what we call the main line.
I mean, at this point, I'm not even keeping track. We've talked a little bit about this, where it's like I am now drifting towards the core concept of good story is good story. Like, if you want to bring me a Finding Nemo that is awesome, then I'm here for it. If you want to bring me Octonauts, fine. That's fine.
There's an article up on Variety about Tim Robinson's I Think You Should Leave tour. And I don't want to be too spoilery in case you're going to go see one of these as it tours around the United States, but special guests come on and watch sketches that were scrapped from the series, sketches that didn't make it into the Netflix series. And then the guests determine whether they should have made the cut or not.
Okay. I'm not going to say, because I have no idea. I'm on the outside of this. However, if I were producing this kind of show, hypothetically, Tom, I might do something bonkers, like, oh, I don't know, make some sketches that were never going to be submitted to Netflix and try to get the audience to react to them.
Yeah. I don't think it makes sense for them to do sketches that everyone agreed weren't good enough for the Netflix show, because then everyone in the audience is going to go, yeah, that wasn't good enough. Why did I sit through that? I like the verite of bringing on judges to be like, oh, should this have made it into the show? And I love where your head's at. And I assume it's true, although, again, no spoilers because we haven't seen it, that they would say, oh, this would have made it into the show if Netflix's standards and practices would have allowed it. But we can do live on stage what we could not do streaming.
At which point you could do like insane production capabilities on there, and then you could get like the audience fired up, like, why was this not in the show?
Yeah, exactly.
Never pitched.
Apple has renewed Monarch for season 2. That's the Godzillaverse show that it did, and says it has plans to do more Godzilla spinoffs. So what Universal couldn't do with its Monsterverse, apparently Apple is able to do with Godzilla.
That's a bit of a curious play, because when I think of Apple, I definitely think of convenience, fidelity, precision of UI. I don't think of IMAX level fidelity of experience. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe there is a checkbox they needed to fill.
It feels to me like Monarch did well. And so they gave it a season 2. That's not super shocking. maybe it did better, way better than they expected. And, you know, their research is that people are like, give me more. I love everything Godzilla. You guys respected the source material well. I want other things. And Apple is now looking at it as like, okay, yeah, let's feed that hunger.
That does sound like a bit of foreshadowing of our Fallout discussion, but yes.
Oh, yeah. Jon Snow TV show, on the other hand, will not happen, according to Jon Snow. Kit Harington said, and I quote,
and now my watching has ended.
Now your watching is ended. Kit Harington said, currently it's off the table because we all couldn't find the right story to tell that we were all excited about enough. So we decided to lay down tools with it for the time being. There may be a time in the future where we return to it, but at the moment, no, it's firmly on the shelf.
That's funny. I would have imagined off the shelf would be the phrase, but that's
well, it's on the table. They're tabling a motion, but that means different things in different parts of the world.
But if you're if you're somebody who sells things,
but you shelve something when you don't want it to do, yeah. Yeah, shelve that for now.
When I go to Walmart, I want the things I want on the shelf.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, whatever he means, we're not getting a Jon Snow TV show. But he leaves the door ajar. He's like, for now. He's like, if we ever find out, if we ever hit on the concept, this is what everybody wants to hear. And maybe he's just saying what people want to hear, which is we didn't want to do a crappy Jon Snow story. So we're not doing one until we come up with a version that's not crappy.
Right. Which is, as you and I both know, is kind of like a coded way to say, I don't know, fans, do you want to have an uprising?
Yep. Yep. rally to the wall, if you will. All right. Netflix bringing movies to the theaters it's owned. If you don't know, Netflix owns New York's Paris Theater. I know that's confusing, but it's in New York. It's called the Paris Theater. The Egyptian here in Hollywood and the Bay Theater here in Pacific Palisades. And it's going to be showing
Texas Theater in Nebraska.
at least the Pacific Palisades has a bay near it. The Beverly Hills Cop, Footloose, and other movies from 1984 are going to run in these theaters. So I imagine it's part Netflix justifying the expense of owning these theaters and part, hey, directors who hate us because we skipped the 90-day window for so many years and we don't have great relationships with theaters. Come watch how much respect we have for theaters and presenting movies in theaters.
Well, to be honest, I'd be really curious, courtkillers@gmail.com. There are now two theaters, not only the Alamo Drafthouse chain here in Austin, but also Evo and I guess also the Movie House chain here in Austin. All of them are doing these like special event old movie things. And in a world where like at the end of the day, it's like, oh, I loved that movie when I was 12. My kid is 12. I can eat pizza and have beer. Yes. I haven't gone to any of them, but I would love to hear those experiences from other people.
And this is clearly Netflix owning these theaters is outreach to the film community to be like, look, we're trying to do the right thing. We're preserving old theaters. We're showing old movies in them. So I'd keep an eye on what else Netflix does to try to get people to think of them as respecting the culture of film, because they're often held up as like Netflix, they're ruining film because they want people to watch things at home. When it was HBO Max that put all their movies on HBO Max, not Netflix.
I used to be a little bit more hostile to Hollywood in general, but now I understand. It's like, look, if you're going to drop everything, leave your family, go to the West Coast and try to make it, then the cultural cachet of having your movie in a movie theater probably matters a lot to you.
There's something fancy about a movie in a movie theater. Yep. Not going to lie.
I'm less frustrated by all of that now. Yeah.
Speaking of movies and movie theaters, Disney released a bunch of new dates for several of their movies. Night Bitch, a comedy horror film starring Amy Adams, will open in limited release on December 6th.
It's about hold on. I can land this. It's about Richard Nixon.
let's see if he's right, folks. Comedy horror film starring Amy Adams is all the information I have on it. So yes, the answer is yes. That's exactly right. So that one's coming on December 6th. The Amateur, a spy thriller with Rami Malek and Rachel Brosnahan. That one comes April 11th. Tron Ares, the sequel to Tron, will open. Well, the sequel to whatever the last Tron was.
Tron Legacy.
Will open October 10th of 2025. The Mandalorian and Grogu, a cinematic spinoff of the hit Disney Plus series, will open May 22nd, 2026. So a couple of years down the road. Toy Story 5. Why Not will debut June 19th, 2026. And
Quest for More Money.
Live action Moana has been pushed back to July 10th, 2026.
Okay. So. This sounds like a lot of Disney.
It's a lot of Disney movies, and now you know when they are. All right, let's move on to The Buried Treasure. I'll get mine out of the way first, because I think we're going to talk a lot more about yours, Brian. Every year, my wife and I participate in Couchella, where you watch the Coachella Movie Festival on your couch live streaming. It has changed over the years in being available with one stream where you didn't get to choose. You just watched whoever was on. I believe we had to watch it on our Xbox for some reason. It has then moved to YouTube. It had for years a couple of streams. And then I believe last year or the year before, they started to give you dedicated streams for each tent. So, you know, the Sahara stage, the Gobi stage, all of the stages they have there. And this year, it's the first time where they did multi-view so that you could actually have four stages up at once, and be able to just highlight which stage you wanted to hear the music out of, which is helpful when you're waiting for someone to go on stage that you want to see. But you're like, yeah, let me sample some, what's going on the other stages.
Well, this is closer to what it seems like you like about the Olympics experience, is the ability to hop around. Like, things are happening, and they're happening live in real time, and I get to judge them and feel superior to them. Tom Merritt.
Yes, that, exactly. Especially that last part. But yeah, it's a little weird because you don't get to pick the stages and put them in the four box. They just have dedicated streams for every combination of stages that you could think of. So you start the four box stream of four stages, and then they have one other four box stream of four stages, or you can choose these three or these two. But basically you have it up there, and then once the thing that you want to watch is on, you can click on that square and it'll go full screen, and then you're watching just that.
Did you ever find yourself encountering choice paralysis in that stuff? Like, no. I know you like having the options, but like at some point, for me, those experiences feel like, oh, now I have to do switching for you, you know, that kind of thing.
I didn't. And that's the beauty of Couchella over the Olympics. You only have six stages to choose from. And not all stages have an act playing on them at once. So really, most of the time, it's choosing between two or three. And you have a great way. It's easy to see because they put up a slate when no one's performing. Here's who's coming next. And you're like, oh, great. I'll just keep an eye on that till J Balvin comes on. Meanwhile, let me check out this Sabrina Carpenter. And then you discover people that you never saw before. And you're like, damn, that's Sabrina Carpenter. She's pretty great. I'm going to add her to my playlist now.
That's kind of brilliant in so far as it gives you structurally permission to only half pay attention. And if you're only half paying attention, then why not go check out some of the other stages?
Because the choice paralysis doesn't come because you're not spending a lot, right? You're not spending a lot of attention. So the only thing I would say is you did have to pay attention if you're not on the stage you want to be at. So when Le Sserafim came on, which was the act I was most excited to see, I made sure I didn't miss it. I actually went to the channel and were just listening to the hold music. But with J Balvin, for instance, it started and I don't know how much I missed. I don't think I missed much, but I'm like, oh crap, he started, and I had to go over there. So they could use maybe some better alerts or something.
You'll never know how much you missed because you missed.
You can rewind. That's actually the other cool thing is we actually just went back and like, oh well, let's just rewind and we'll start from the beginning. So they do replays and everything. I can't say enough good things about how YouTube is streaming the Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival. All right.
A quick question. How do you rate this year to previous years?
Better.
Okay. What's funny is like when I asked that question, I phrased it poorly. So half of me thought you were going to be like, well, you go to this website and you select this many stars.
You press the like or subscribe button.
Not the answer.
Unequivocally, this is the best they've done yet. And that's, I'm not trying to say it was bad in the past. They get better every year. And this is the best. Few little things that I could see them improve for next year too. It was much better. Meanwhile, sometimes while there was an artist playing that maybe I wasn't as into, I was watching Fallout on a second screen on my lap.
Oh my God, Tom, I got full on in trouble. I got in trouble with the missus. She walked in on me watching Fallout and she goes, you know what, Brian? You made a promise to your daughter that you were going to watch this with her. And I was like, woman, you think I ain't going to watch this 8 times? Like, this is so freaking good.
And then after she got done slapping you for saying that.
I may have thought the word woman, but I don't know. There's something about that primitive 1950s man. You know what? Maybe it's because I was watching Fallout.
I did run into some person somewhere, maybe on X, who was confused by the fact that it's the 1950s, but in the 2100s. I just accept that. That's Fallout. I don't even know the games that well, but I've played a little bit and I love the gestalt of all of it. And I know some of the tropes, but for the most part, I was not sitting there going, that's from the game, that's from the game, that's from the game. I was just enjoying the style, the beautiful editing, the beautiful photography, the amazing acting, and the wonderful pacing of the story.
Okay. So for those who are uninitiated, within the game, from what I've read, the crafters of it, I'm not going to talk about the games, but imagine a universe where everything ramps up and they never get around to inventing the transistor, right? So everything is vacuum tubes. Everything is 1950s. Now, keep in mind, technology progresses. So as a result, there's a 500,000 horsepower Corvair that you could drive around, but everything is analog and broadcast based. You know what? We wrote some rules for how we're going to talk about this.
Good point. If you are a patron and you get After Talk, we are going to get spoilery in After Talk. So we will talk about our full thoughts of Fallout without holding back in case you haven't watched
on plot points.
Yeah. But that will be only available to patrons and only walled off in After Talk. For this show, because it's got a wider audience and because we generally don't do spoilers on Cord Killers, we're going to talk non-spoilery about how much we both seem to have loved Fallout because it was great.
I would like to officially take back anything negative I've ever said about Jonathan Nolan or any of the team on Westworld. This was gorgeous. The pacing was incredible. The talent was sublime. Walton Goggins is amazing in it. The surprise vignettes from Matt Berry and there was one later on that surprised me that was incredible as well. We'll talk about all that in after talk, but just speaking about the composition, Fallout is designed as a video game to be one of those open world games where you're just constantly being distracted by side quest after side quest. And there are different cultures and at the risk of making a pun, enclaves of different groups of people. From a production standpoint, watching the color palettes and watching the style guides and the character guides of each of the individual societies was just an absolute treat. It jumps forward and backwards in time, and it has a conceit where all of it makes sense and is consistent. And the one thing I didn't expect, Tom, was to really feel emotionally moved by the end of it. It was more powerful than it had any right to be. And I loved it. It was better than it needed to be. And I'm as somebody who was scared of this coming out, as much as I love to talk about just everyone make everything, cheer for everything. But this one was precious to me because I have played every single version of every single Fallout game, all the way back to Wasteland on the 286 PC, all the way before that, seeing the inspiration for it with a boy and his dog. I've seen and played all of them, and it gave me a little bit of tickle of like, please, please, please don't screw this up. they did not. They did very, very well.
It is compelling as a story without knowing anything about the video games. I feel comfortable saying that because I know very little about the games. And what video game stories, movies or TV shows, often have trouble with is holding true to the game and telling a compelling story. A lot of times those are at cross purposes because you're talking about two different mediums. I think Last of Us did a great job because Last of Us, the video game, was a story. So that gave him a leg up. Fallout was not a story, as far as I understand, right?
No, correct. It was an open world adventure. You could start your quest and decide to not ever get around to finishing it and have a great time. That was not the case with The Last of Us.
Yeah. A lot of times what happens is the writer of the TV show or movie decides they have a great story and then gets annoyed that the video game has certain things that make them want to go, well, maybe you shouldn't do that. Or, oh, I'm just going to change that from the video game. And then the video game fans get upset. Clearly, the creators of this TV series love the video game and knew how to tell a compelling story and did the mental gymnastics to reconcile those.
Well, and because the game itself is an open world adventure, non-spoilery, we'll talk about it more later. It managed to tell a full chapter of what is known about this universe. And the loop closes, and yet the characters remain open for the, as I understand it, already approved season 2 of the series.
Yeah. So if you haven't checked it out, Amazon Prime Video, all 10 episodes available for streaming at once, which I both loved and hated. I loved that I could just go right to the next one because that's what I wanted. But part of me was like, I need boundaries.
I've seen a couple of articles saying like you shouldn't do that or whatever. But I mean, whatever. Like a Harry Potter book comes out, nobody's telling you have to read it all over one weekend. You just You just do. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Thank you, Open Bio. It's 8 episodes. I think I said 10 by mistake.
Yeah. The color palettes and the framing are incredible. Walton Goggins is incredible. The cameo by Matt Berry is incredible. It's a very, 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 they did right. Tom, I think they did right.
I think
by,
they did.
By my favorite video game franchise.
I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so glad they did. I'm so glad I enjoyed it too. Let's talk more in After Talk. If you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Usually we pause here to talk about things that are coming up that either Brian or I are doing outside of Cord Killers. But we just finished a pretty great thing at your place last Monday, which is why there was no Cord Killers episode last Monday.
Yeah. Welcome to a new segment called Brian and Tom Sit Back and Do an Impression of Tenacious D going, "We rocked so hard."
Listen, if anything, this is a promotion for next year's Founders Day, should there be one. Granted, there won't be an eclipse, and the eclipse was the highlight.
Oh, no. I'm going to book the moon every year from now on.
Okay, yeah, you're going to get them. That's amazing.
Yeah. Never even heard of.
Fantastic. But I'll venture to say that while the eclipse was certainly the highlight, and the fact that Brian was able to make the clouds cover the eclipse until the last minute and then part them dramatically is one of the greatest magic tricks he's ever pulled off. I would have had a great time without the eclipse. Like it was still wonderful and kind of in its groove now that you've done it for several years, where, you know, saw some old faces, met some new faces, had a great time. Everybody's relaxed. Everybody knows what's going on. It was great.
Yeah, for those who didn't know, like the core pitch was kind of an Evel Knievel stunt where it's like, what if there was an eclipse and we had a talented musician perform all of Dark Side of the Moon and end with the track Eclipse, end with the line, but the sun is eclipsed by the moon, and then the sun becomes eclipsed by the moon. And we pulled it off, and it was cloudy that day, which was like, whoops. But then the clouds parted and we all just saw totality. And then it pulled away and it created what they call the diamond ring formation, which was special and precious to all of us. Along the way, we had a bluffing tournament and a robot unicorn attack tournament, and Jomo and the Possum Posse, and a podcast. Tom, you know what it made me think of? It made me think of the James Webb Space Telescope. And when it was going to unfurl, they were talking about, I think it was, this is the wrong number, but 368 points of failure that could happen as it unfolded. But you know what? It unfolded and everything worked great. And the moment that eclipse showed, I remember there was a lot of hugs and a lot of tears, and I remember deeply feeling, this is what it felt like when Mission Control heard the words, "The eagle has landed." Mm-hmm. that's what happens when you have a 5-year called shot that is going to be successful based on the weather.
Yeah. Right down to the end. Well done, folks. Well done. All right. Let's go, and what do you say we scan the horizon for some other news before we wrap up?
I was going to say, wait, for another eclipse?
A report from piracy data analytics company Musso revealed that video piracy websites around the globe received 141 billion visits in 2023, making a 12% increase when you compare it to 2019. I mean, if you pick a date 4 years before that, you get a double-digit increase. That's the kind of logic used by the Motion Picture Association as they start to drum up support for new laws to help them crack down on piracy websites.
It's been a minute since we've talked about piracy, and it's been a minute since I've engaged or touched any kind of piracy. But I think that we should tee up courtkillers at gmail.com. Send us your tales of piracy. I think it's worth going back and looking at again, because I have beloved people I know who are able to hold the contradictory ideas of being angry at AI for stealing from artists, and yet also feel justified for not paying for Photoshop because it's too expensive. And I when I have those discussions, it's really fascinating to me. I don't think we have time to really dive into this one, but we'll
have another opportunity. I have a feeling the main part of this story is the MPAA. It's lost an A, but it's still got its mojo for fighting piracy, and they're stoking those old fires again. So I have a feeling this is not the last we will hear about this by far. Paramount's going to shut down its standalone Showtime app on April 30th. Showtime now included in Paramount Plus on a tier, obviously. So you can get it through the Paramount Plus app. And so they're just going to say, yeah, you want Showtime, just get it in the Paramount Plus app. We don't need to keep an entire other app. This is similar to what Warner Brothers did when it merged HBO into its other service to create what's now called Max. And it's an example of the fact that we're in this consolidation phase. That means mergers and acquisitions, many yet to come. But it also means companies reducing the number of offerings they have as well.
Quick question, and maybe this is something else we should unpack. Like, we were very, very about smashing the machine 10 years ago. Do you mind the consolidating that's happening? or is this a future conversation?
Well, Paramount saying, I have two apps. You pay for them separately. I'm going to put them in one app. And you can still pay for them individually. Like, you can get one without the other. That's fine. I don't mind that at all. That's just simplifying things. We start merging companies, I may have a different opinion on that. Yeah. We'll see. Roku revealed today that its Pro Series TVs, the lineup of high-end televisions it makes, are now available for purchase in the U.S. When I say today, I mean 2 weeks ago when I wrote this. Starting now, Roku Pro Series TVs are available at Best Buy and online. There are three sizes, 55, 65, 75 inches, range from $900 to $1,700, and they all get Smart Picture, which uses algorithms to adjust picture quality based on the content. So if you're not the kind of person who likes to tune your TV, which plenty of you are, but if you're the kind of person who's like, yeah, I don't want to do that, this is a nice option to be like, oh, it's an action movie. We're going to adjust the black levels because we know that that's how it works. Oh, it's sports. We'll turn motion smoothing on because that's the one place where motion smoothing looks good, that kind of stuff.
Do you still use any of the built-in Rokus on any of your televisions? Like, we talked about we previously have talked about how TVs tend to have like a 7-year upcycle rhythm.
We only have one TV that has Roku operating system. It's in Eileen's office, and she does still use it. So I can't remember how old that thing is, but it's 4 or 5 years old now.
Yeah, I this past few months is the first time that I've started to get frustrated with the out of date hardware.
The LG TV we have has the LG Web OS, and that TV is 8 or 9 years old. That lightweight OS still works when we need it. We don't use it for a lot, but when we use it, it's like, oh yeah, it's working fine. AMC Networks will add a cheaper ad-supported subscription across all of its streaming portfolio. So that's not just AMC. That's the other streaming services it operates. New versions will be up and running by the end of the 2024-2025 upfront, which is happening in a few weeks. So look for cheaper versions of AMC Network streaming services supported by ads. And WrestleMania XL set a record on Peacock as Peacock's most streamed entertainment event ever. Entertainment event, not sports event. So it didn't pass the NFL playoff game, but the most streamed entertainment event ever on Peacock.
The WrestleMania thing makes sense. I mean, it's like whatever they're doing, they're doing it right. ad-supported tiers, are we headed towards a world where just everything is going to have ads again?
I think
like
so.
Everything old is new again.
Well, they realize there's money in ads. And they realized, we can offer people the ability to pay without ads at a premium if there's a version with ads. And people are used
to... Meanwhile, nobody wants to do that.
I guess you misunderstood what... I didn't make it clear what I'm saying. We can keep raising prices on the ad-free version if we have an ad-supported version that's cheaper, right?
So
because the ad-free then becomes the premium version that you pay more for.
Right. So it's like, quote unquote, the number is $9.99 in was and always has been. It's a bit like Coca-Cola for decades would insist on making their bottles smaller so that they could hold on to that 5 cents
for the price point.
And so I think we're seeing a degradation of the product to hold on to that easy to remember number.
Ad supported tiers are the shrinkflation of streaming.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Let us move on to the chatter. We love getting emails from you folks. Cordkillers@gmail.com. Mike in Mississippi has a great tip. He was listening to us talk on After Talk because we were discussing what our next full experience on Spoiler in Time was going to be. It's Battlestar Galactica, by the way. And I was having a hard time finding the lowest rated. It's easy to find the highest rated because you can easily search by rating, but it's hard. You can't flip the rating. And thank you, Mike. Mike said from the main IMDb page for a series, if you click on the rating, it takes you to a detailed ratings page that includes a color-coded table of season versus episode that makes it much faster to find the highest and lowest rated episodes. And then clicking on the rating opens the page for that episode. Appreciate all you do, and I'm happy to sign your paycheck every month. Thanks, boss, and thanks for the tip. That's very helpful.
Yeah, that's a good one. We also got a bunch of suggestions for full experiences that we should do.
Yeah, so we're doing Battlestar Galactica after we finish $6 Million Man, which we're finishing this week. But Tim sent us Blake's Seven. That's a good one. Star Cops, The Phil Silvers Show, and Red Dwarf. And not only sent those as examples of ones that they would like to see, but also gave us the first, ultimate, least, and last examples based on the IMDb readings. So thanks for doing that legwork for us as well. Appreciate that, Tim.
Which also is a pretty good way to seduce us into trying it. It's like I'm looking at a jump from like an 8.7 to a 5.1, and I'm like, ooh, what happened there?
What happened? Yeah, exactly. So keep those coming to us, folks. Love to get your emails, and even if we don't read them on the show, we read every one of them, and we find them super helpful. But, you probably get on the show as well. So send them along, cordkillers@gmail.com. Our website is cordkillers. Our email address, again, is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live at twitch.tv/nightattack Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. I reckon we'll talk to you next time.